This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and to help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/TrekFM. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type BABEL into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi there, everybody. This is Vic Mignogna, Captain Kirk from Star Trek Continues, and you're listening to Trek FM.
The Romulans, they're here, shouting, screaming, and declaring war on Earth. It's going to get ugly.
Hi, I'm Tony Robinson, and with me today on Continuing Mission is Mark Nakarato, the director of a new Star Trek fan film, The Romulan War. If you like war documentaries, then you're going to love this. Mark is currently raising funds on Indiegogo to finish the film, and he needs the help of all Star Trek fans. To hear more about the Romulan War, let's get now into the turbolift and meet with today's guest, Mark Nakarato. Welcome to Continuing Mission, Mark Nakarato.
Welcome, greetings, live long and prosper. How are you today?
Joel and true. I'm good, doing well. yeah, cool. It's great to have you. Mark, you're in Nashville. Is that correct?
I am. Nash Vegas, as we call it.
Nash here. Vegas. Oh, my goodness. I've often thought about, as you're a movie maker and you're making some, I often thought about somebody doing a Trek Goes Country type movie.
You know, I feel like back in the 90s, I actually saw some kind of animated Star Trek fan film that was, that had a country theme to it. It was called Hick Trek. I remember what it was called. But I remember it being silly, and that's about all I remember about it. And I had nothing to do with it.
So. Now, the idea came because I've often wondered about the original title for Star Trek, which was Wagon Train to the Stars, and that gave it the cowboy feel, and then by extension, it gave it the country music feel, and blah, you know, so on. Anyway, so big Star Trek fans in Nashville?
Sure, I mean, you know, Star Trek fans everywhere. Star Trek fans in Nashville. Certainly Discovery has revived a lot of interest, after Trek being on a break for 15-ish years or so. Mm. And so, it's good to see interest in Star Trek again.
Yes, it is. So you are putting together a movie, and at this point in time, I don't know how long you've been working on the movie, so I'm going to ask you that in a sec, but you're putting together a movie which is about the Romulan War, the war between Earth and the Romulan Empire, and excuse those little dings that are going on in the background. Some Trek FM people are trying to contact me at an inconvenient moment. But coming back to that, so you've got this movie going between Earth and the Romulan Empire. So what I'm interested in is, how did that all start? Where did your interest lie, and how did that come about?
Oh, well, it's been a long road. yes,
there's a do it, with a country.
Yeah, I had to do the country inflection. Yeah. I would say my earliest memories of Star Trek were watching TOS classic series at my grandparents' house. I was born and raised in Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, in the U.S. And every Sunday we would have Sunday dinner at my grandparents' house, and they could barely speak a word of English. They were first generation immigrants from Italy to the U.S. And And so we would have dinner over there, and it would be watching, you know, football, American football, of course. And then we would watch Star Trek and the BBC's The World at War. That would always be on the local PBS, public broadcasting station. And one of the first episodes I remember of Star Trek was Balance of Terror, and the big reveal about the Romulans and their true identity, and how that was a big surprise to everybody. So that was kind of a big moment for me. And that sort of interest in World War II documentaries, like with The World at War, and then also Star Trek. So that was kind of a thing. I would say that both of those were formative things in my life that interested me in filmmaking, and then later would be Star Wars. And then I did an independent film back in the early 2000s that had that sort of reality docu format. It was a superhero story. And so I've always been kind of drawn to that documentary format. And the Romulan War sort of ties in between my interest in Star Trek and my sort of interest in World War II documentary type programming. And plus I always felt that the Romulan War, or the, I should say the Earth Romulan War, was probably the most critical piece of the future history of Star Trek. And we've never really gotten to seen it on an official production, because without the Romulan War, there is no Federation. And, that I've always been kind of disappointed and surprised that that's not been told in sort of a bigger scale on screen. And so that's where my interest lies. I first came up with, when Enterprise premiered, or when they announced Enterprise was going to air, and it was a prequel, a filmmaking friend of mine talked about, hey, if we could do a prequel for Enterprise, what would that, a prequel for Star Trek, what would that be like? And we were riffing, and the thing I almost immediately said would be the first episode of this series, Enterprise, should be a 2-hour pilot that is Pearl Harbor, where, out of nowhere, the peaceable Romulan, or the peaceful humans minding their own business at a starbase, are brutally attacked. And they then have to retool all of their science and exploration efforts into war. And so, of course, that didn't happen with Enterprise. They obviously went a different way. That was sort of how fans are. What if they could do this? And then Enterprise ended. And there were some enjoyable things about Enterprise, but they did not get to a 7-year run. And they didn't get to tell that story. And I use that as a jump off point. Like, they couldn't tell that story. I will. Though certainly our story doesn't focus on Archer and his crew. It takes a documentary format. So we are at different places and points following events throughout the war. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. How long has your movie been in production in terms of, okay, day one, we got a script, what do we do next? And up to the point where you're going to require some capital to do the post-production?
I'd say, of course, I've been tinkering with the script off and on since probably 2009, as far as drafts. And again, it's episodic. So I would write a scene or a scenario and then discard it and then bring it back and change it. And this has been going on for a long time. But I knew from the very beginning that because of how the story was structured, that if I couldn't find somebody to do or find a team to do effects, that it would never get made. And frankly, that's the reason why the Romulan War is only getting done now, is because it's only within the last year or so, year and a half, that I've been able to work with a reliable partner on the effects shots. But as a project, I would say the script, it being in a shootable format where we were ready to go shoot on a stage and get actors, that was probably about 2 years ago. But the story itself had been going on through various rewrites, and I've got storyboards from, 2012, and, I even have, that's the other thing too, I can talk a little bit about later, is Memory Alpha, which is on our website, theromulanwar.com. We have a space where if you're a donor, you can go into Memory Alpha and log in, and you can see sort of old versions of storyboards and tests and all kinds of other things. But yeah, this has been something we've been working on for a long time, but never took hold and got moving until we connected with Samuel Cockings, who is doing a large, vast majority of the special effects for the project.
Unlike most fan movies who require funding, they seem to have the idea that this is what we're going to do. Let's have some money and then we'll get going. But you've been going for a long time, and this is the tail end of the production that you're now seeking to fund. And that in itself makes it an unusual venture. So it's not like you're coming in cold.
No, I've been funding all of this out of my own pocket up until now, and it's been several thousands of dollars, at which point my wife put the hammer down and said, "You're done spending money on this," which, it is what it is. And I know who the boss is. And so that's why but clearly we weren't, and mostly what we had gotten done up to that point were a lot of pre-production, getting designs, the virtual sets, getting some shots in the can, sort of proof of concept, and then also the filming piece of it. So I've spent my out of my own pocket, and honestly, it was a big decision for me to decide to do it as an Indiegogo. Or is fund crowdsourcing at all, because I would have preferred not to even do it like that. If I could have funded it all myself, I would have done it. But there's just not a way to do it with the quality level and the kind of story we want to tell. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, maybe I should have started earlier. I don't know if that would have made any difference or not, to be honest with you. I don't know if there's ever a perfect time. You just do it when you can.
Yeah. No, there is the perfect time is the day you start. That's the perfect time. In terms of the story, you're doing it in a documentary style. There's no, am I right in saying there's no story? Everything is a reference. There's people saying this is what happened then, and then that's what happened here, but there's no story arc. So it's not an acting piece from start to finish. It's more of a documentary with cut scenes then coming in to illustrate what happened on the day.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. It's not dissimilar from if you watched, like I said, the World at War, or in the States, we had a big award-winning series called The Civil War on our public broadcasting. In shorthand for Trek, yes, it's not dissimilar from Axanar as well. Axanar tells its story in that way, where you have either participants or outside people talking about the events that happen, and then you see those events happen. So yes, that's the format that we've gone for. Though I will say, one of the things that's a little different, which we'll be rolling out this week, is we are going to be making some extra content. Audio dramas and such that are sort of like captain's logs or officer's logs, people recording events that are eyewitness journals, and those will fill in some gaps from the story proper. And we're going to make those available also through Memory Alpha.
Good, good. In the notes that accompany your production, there was something I read about CBS, because you're obviously doing this according to the guidelines,
Yeah. Okay. There was something about CBS requiring you that you didn't have professional actors in on the show. And then somebody else corrected and said, no, that's not true. You can. You just don't pay them exorbitant amounts of money. You just, you know, they'll come on for whatever fee they agreed to come on for. So that brings me around to the question of your acting troupe. Where did you get them from? Who are they?
The actors are all locally based here in Nashville. At least one of them I worked with before on a previous project. And, we compensated them in the context of we gave them gas money and fed them. They certainly didn't work for union scale or a full day rate. But they are all, they're not my, my buddies from the Star Trek Club or down at the bar. These people are trained actors, and we really need to have that. It doesn't do the material well to have, especially with that concept, you have to sell people on the idea that these are experts, these are eyewitnesses, and it's not going to serve the material well by having people who have not acted before. So that's kind of where we are. And I was very happy and very happy with all the performances we got out of folks. We did a video that we put online last week that highlighted our cast. But that's not even all of our cast. That's sort of like a first wave, and there'll be more information coming later about some of the other cast members and their smaller parts. But yeah, those were the primary folks that we have performing.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think it's important that the people speaking the lines or whatever, drive the production forward with that professionalism that they have. You know, it makes it believable. It makes it likable. It makes it just captures your attention. Yeah. Okay. And we're moving on to the production side of it, because you mentioned Sam Cockings, and I believe he's played a major role in rendering all the CGI effects that you're going to need or do need or have already done. I saw his Romulan Stormbird ship, which is impressive, I have to say.
A good looking ship, yeah.
Yeah, it is a good looking ship.
It's a good looking ship.
Awesome firepower.
Yeah. Yeah. It is Starfleet's worst nightmare in our film, at least until a certain point when Starfleet, regroups and makes a comeback and figures out how to beat Stormbird. Sam has been invaluable. I've said that before. Had Sam not agreed to come on the project, I'd still be rewriting scenes or more likely moving on to one of the other projects I'm working on that are not sci-fi related. So he's been great. He's good to work with. It was a little bit of a challenge having to do things over Skype. I have a film and video background, and I was an editor and a post-production editor. And I'm used to normally, at least in the past, things have changed a little bit, but sitting with somebody in an editing bay and working with them one-on-one. And so doing things over Skype or whatever has been fun. And so, yeah, he's been great to work with. It's not just Sam. Sam has, he's got a couple people helping him. And then we also used an effects artist here in Nashville as well, who's done one sequence, and I'm hoping we'll come back to do a couple more sequences. And he does great work too. His name is Wes Ware. And he primarily does a lot of advertising and industrial stuff. And frankly, he did some of his shots as a favor. We'll see if he can fit me into his schedule to help out on a few more things. But yes, Sam's help has been invaluable. Plus he knows, I have a really good shorthand with him. He knows the ships, he knows the era, This all takes place in the Enterprise era, which many Star Trek fans are probably not as familiar with. People, I think, are more familiar with the TNG, DS9, and the original series, not so much with Enterprise, and Sam knows all that stuff. So when we talk about ships and what color the phasers are and stuff like that, he immediately knows and is often one step ahead of me on all that. So that's been very helpful and helped us move things forward a lot faster.
Mm-hmm. We had Sam on the show on a couple of episodes back, so it was great to talk with him. Yeah. I almost jumped one of the points here, so I just want to go back to it. And it's to do with, I was referencing the story outline again. So, essentially, what is the story of the Romulan War? I know that sounds like an obvious question, but where do they jump in, and
that's fair.
What chaos ensues? And
okay. Walking the fine line with revealing too much, but yeah, I can give you the nuts and bolts. Is the story begins right where Enterprise left off. Not the awful last episode, but the last two, what I would consider the real last two episodes of Enterprise, which were Demons and Terra Prime. So it starts right there where Prime Minister Samuels and Captain Archer are trying to negotiate an agreement to form the Coalition of Planets. And this is coming in the wake of some previous events where these different races, the Andorians, the Vulcans, the Tellarites, the humans, had contact with Romulans, trying to divide these worlds and pit them against each other. And that is really the impetus for all of this, is that the Romulans, there's two things. The Romulans see Earth as an instigator who is trying to bring planets together that could be a threat to their influence of power and their borders and their sovereignty. There's also another thing going on too, which is, and this is a driver that we get into in the story, the Romulans are seeking, specifically the Praetor Dedaradex, is seeking an ancient alien technology that will allow him, or allow the Romulans, to arguably conquer the galaxy. And it just so happens that as they've been doing their search over decades for the missing pieces, they're sort of on a Raiders of the Lost Ark quest to find the Spear of Destiny, you know, to find the pieces they need for their secret weapon. Not dissimilar from how the Nazis were in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it just so happens that some of the planets that they want to search for this thing are in coalition territory. So they are violating and making incursions into coalition space and bases and outposts to find on this quest. And so the Romulans do try to disrupt the formation of the Coalition of Planets, and they are marginally successful enough where in the initial stages, or at least through the first half of the war, Earth has to go it alone. So so that's where we take it. And then we follow the first initial battles where there's an open attack on Earth property or Earth facilities. And then there's all kinds of attacks on shipping and colony worlds. And again, the Romulans have an interest in occupying these planets and killing the colonists so they can search for this thing that they're looking for. And so we follow that story, and the humans don't do so well. They don't really have, there's not really a Starfleet that's built for war. They kind of have to learn that on the fly. They have to find a way to retrofit science ships and transports. And they have to conscript people from the Earth Cargo Service and convince them to join the fight. and they're in way over their heads, and the Romulans are, plus the Romulans also have a secret weapon that that the Coalition is unable to fight back against, and that discourages the other planets from engaging in the war too, because they can't ever win a battle. So so that's how we progress through the story, and eventually things turn around, as you might imagine. And you probably can guess how the story ends, because that's the good guys. The question is how they get there, and what are all the obstacles they have to overcome, and what is the perspective of the ship captains that are on these, or that are in these hopeless fights. Ship captains who, there's no red alert yet. There's no sort of, here's what we have to do for combat readiness, and how do they fight this off? And we can't see some of the ships because there's cloaking technology. And so how does this all transpire? And then what's the perspective of a family that raised their family on Alpha Centauri, and they're being warned to get off the planet by Starfleet because the Romulans are coming, and they're, by God, they're going to stay. And so what does that look like? So all kinds of, believe it or not, we can get all that in into two 15-minute stories.
That's excellent.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we are.
So how close are you to finishing this up? In other words, if you had all the cash you needed to do the special effects or visual effects, how close to completing your project would you be?
Well, like I've said before, if we hit our goal and everything goes perfectly, I think we could probably have this done before the end of the year. A lot of stuff, like I said, we've done a lot so far. Most of our footage has been shot, but not all of it. And we've like the pre-production work is done. So a lot of design work has been finished. It's really just a matter of being able to complete what we've already started. So we're hoping to have it out by the end of the year. But, you know, truth be told is, you know, if we don't raise the money we need, then it will be longer than that, I'm sure. So, so that's up to the fans.
That is up to the fans.
Fans want to see it soon. They share the love. Open. Let's see some gold press platinum, right?
Yes, so. Exactly. Well, that neatly leads me on to the next question I had for you, which is what happens next? And you've already mentioned what we're doing, but you know what happens next is people dig deep into their pockets, and
that's right, dig deep. Well, you know, it's one of those things where I think fan films add a very valuable voice to the tapestry of Star Trek. You know, the fan films are in an interesting place right now in the wake of the lawsuit. And also the fact that there's produced real Star Trek on back on television again. So what does all that mean for fan films? I mean, the days of 6 and 7 figure fan films are over. And in some ways you wonder if people got spoiled by that or used to it. And, you probably are not going to see some of these big actors like Tim Russ or George Takei or, you know, the other Trek actor. You're probably not going to see them in fan films anytime soon. And if you do, who knows what those will be like. So the bar's been raised, and the bar has now, you know, the expectations. Yeah, I think the expectations people have as they've grown used to with continuing voyages, and I mean with continues and with Axanar, I think people were kind of going to have to adjust to that. And it we'll see. We'll see if people are willing to contribute and crowdsource in a world where you're not seeing sort of A-list well-known sci-fi actors and Trek properties anymore. So that's all that's all unfolding now. What's next is we hope folks will take a chance on us. This will be, I think, of course I'm going to say this, but I do believe that this is going to be a really fun, interesting, unexplored chapter in the Star Trek universe. I'm hoping that when this is done, if we can get it to the level we want it, that people will equate this for, oh yeah, the Romulan War. That's that thing that guy did, and that's really what happened during the Romulan War. And so that's you know, seen as the official version. I'm hoping that that becomes the case. But we can't do it unless, you know, fans can help us on it. And if we don't hit our goal, I'm going to be persistent about it. We'll still keep moving forward and trying to make it happen. But like I said, it'll just take longer.
Yeah. Okay. There are an amazing amount of people in the world who love Star Trek fan films. And it's great that we're suddenly learning about the Romulan War. As I said earlier, a huge amount of work has already been done, and you are in the process of finishing it off, and you need help. So where can people find out more about the project? I know it sounds obvious, but maybe people haven't picked up on what we're talking about. So.
Yeah, sure. The first and foremost, the location that if people want information to find out about the project and how to contribute is through our website, www.theromulanwar.com. That's got links to the Indiegogo, and when the Indiegogo is over, that will be the location for all the updates. Things that we release to our contributors and the captain's blog. That's a section I have on the website where I do some periodic updates and talk about what's going on. So the RomulanWar.com. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/TheRomulanWar. And we have a YouTube page as well. So, which is youtube.com/C/TheRomulanWar. For whatever reason, YouTube changed its metrics for how it assigns page URLs, and now there's a C for some reason. I'm not sure why. So, and then, of course, Indiegogo.com, you can search The Romulan War. But first and foremost, we ask people to come through the website. That has all the links you need to go everywhere else, all the different social media sites. And like I said, we are going to be pushing out some extra content, things like audio dramas and behind the scenes and stuff like that. And that's always the place to go look.
Okay. And for you, Mark, if people want to get in touch with you directly, how can they go about doing that?
Well, they can do it through the website. They can send me an email, theromulanwar@gmail.com. I try as hard as I can to get back to people. I'm not doing this in a vacuum. I do have a full-time job and a family, so that's a struggle to try and keep up with all the comments and questions people have. So, reach out to me if you have any questions. I'll do my best to get back to you as soon as I can. And then, of course, you can message us through our Facebook and our website and YouTube and stuff like that.
Mark, thank you for coming on Continuing Mission today to talk about the Romulan War. It's a very exciting project. I'm sure a lot of people are tuning into it, and there's a lot of people out there who haven't yet given a contribution to your work, but I'm sure they will from this moment onwards, because we are such power in the universe, Trek FM.
Resistance is futile.
Yes, that's right. Something like that. But I do thank you for being a guest on today's show, and we will encourage people to support the project.
So great. Well, thanks for inviting me on. And in the larger sense, I'm glad that you are. This is a niche of a niche of a niche, and I think it's great that you have been doing this for so long and trying to promote the fan community, because, if fans don't take ownership of this and push it out there, then it just won't happen. So And I know you're probably not, you know, buying a new car based off of your income from the podcast. So my hat's off to you for all the volunteer work that you put in to make this happen. So that's great.
I wish there was income off these podcasts. But, then I'd probably have a go-kart or something. Something without an engine. Yeah.
Or, yeah. So, no, thanks so much for having me on.
You're welcome.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed our chat with Mark Nakorato today, and I hope you sincerely get behind the project and make it happen. But while we've been having a great chat with Mark, that's not the only thing that has been discussed on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Also, and this might be me reading way too much into this, but I feel like because Tilly ends up being so instrumental in what happens later in the Mirror Universe, part of me when I was reading this wondered if in the back of my mind, Stamets is like, I need to have one person, and Lark is like, oh, I want to make my own. Tilly, that's who you want. Yeah, okay, sure.
To the journey!
This is Jeff Foxworthy, You Might Be a Redneck If.
Oh, Lord.
If you fall in love with a hologram,
you might be in a doomed relationship.
If you fall in love and it never really happened,
you might be in a doomed relationship.
If you fall in love with someone manipulative,
you might be in a doomed relationship.
If you can't even remember your own name,
you're definitely in a doomed relationship.
The Orb.
So I'm going to destroy your computers. So if you want to fight, you're going to have to use real bombs. I hope you're ready because I'm leaving. You figure it out. But of course, trailing the Enterprise is always the Starfleet cleanup ship that comes in and cleans
up the mess.
Yeah, the
USS Broom Sweep.
Right,
yeah.
The USS Broom Sweep.
Standard orbit.
Can we not just go to just a planet and everybody has dark complexion and it's not a thing? You know, it's not like a crux of the story, right? I think that would have been true progress. And when it's not even like, oh, well, since we're going to this planet, we have to talk about race. That's the whole point of the whole story. It serves the story well, but I don't think that's a prerequisite to have a story like this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Do check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select continuing mission. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. You can find me, Tony Robinson, also on Twitter at shamrock165. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can also become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm, and get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Before we leave you today, we'd like to thank our founder and publisher, C. Brian Jones, our executive producer, Ken Tripp. I'm Tony Robinson. You've been listening to Continuing Mission, and we hope to have you on board with us again real soon.